Today, my guests are Anne Muir Curran and Trent Copeland. We will be talking about their work with the ACLU, the immigrant communities in Shasta County, and as well as other issues of immigration. I would also like to just take a moment to say that this is a sort of historic day for KKRN because it's the first time we've done back-to-back live programs. So we're a little bit getting used to that transition. So I would like to start out by introducing my two guests and telling you a little about them, and then we'll get on with the discussion. Trent Copeland is a retired language development specialist from Shasta County Schools, having taught at Nova and Enterprise High School, working with the immigration population. In the past, he has served on the Southeast Asia Christian Ministries, a ministry to refugees and immigrants serving Humboldt, Lassen, Shasta, Siskiyou counties, and he has served on SCAR, Shasta County Citizens Advocating Respect, and he is currently on the board of UPrep High School in Shasta County. He owns a small business in Reading, and his family heritage goes back to 1851 in Shasta County, which is quite an unusual and great thing. So welcome, Trent.
Thank you, Ellen. It's nice to be here.
Thanks. And Anne Muir Curran is currently the pastor at Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ in Reading. She has served congregations in the United Church of Christ in California since 1985. She also serves on the ACLU Northern California Affiliate Board of Directors and the ACLU Tehama Shasta Trinity Chapter Board of Directors. So welcome to you too, Anne.
Thank you.
So we're glad to have both of you here. The United States of America has long been known as a nation of immigrants. Indeed, our entire history has been shaped by people who were born elsewhere or whose parents or grandparents were born in another country. The poem inscribed on the Statue of Liberty, the beacon of welcome to those who arrive in the U.S., is part of the fabric of our nation. Haven't you heard before, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. And that has always been a part of our country, having immigrants. But things have changed over time, and things haven't changed over time. People are still coming as immigrants, just as they also always have. And the statistics nationally on immigration that I was able to find are that there are about 44 million immigrants in the United States now, which represents about 13.5% of our population. And 81 million immigrants and their U.S.-born children, with the immigrants born elsewhere plus the those born is 81 million, and it's 26% of our population. It took me a little while to get that out. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what we're interested in today is knowing some things about what is going on in Shasta County with immigrants, and these are two people here in the studio who are going to be able to enlighten us a little bit on that. So my first question was going to be, do you have anything that you can tell us generically or basically about the number of immigrants in Shasta County?
The immigrant population is fairly small, Shasta County. I don't know what the county population, 190,000, 200,000 perhaps. And it's very small from any country, Mexico, Canada, China, pretty minor.
Mm-hmm. We have quite a, I know I live in Bernie, and there is a fairly decent-sized immigrant community of farm workers there, mm-hmm. which are mostly Mexican, mm-hmm. I think. So,
and while Shasta County has fewer, California as a whole has a huge population. They say nearly one in four Californians is an immigrant, one in two children have one or two parents that are immigrants. I mean, that's huge.
And I have an interesting statistic. The country of origin of most non-native speakers in the world or in the United States is the United States. So these are children mm-hmm. born to parents that don't speak English. And so their first language is Spanish or Chinese or mm-hmm. whatever nation of origin they are.
In the little bit that I did read about the population, it was mentioned, and I looked at statistics that went back to, you know, 100 years or more. Mm-hmm. And originally, the most immigrants were coming from Latin America, which is in the same hemisphere, makes sense in that way. I wouldn't say that's originally, because originally people came from Europe, as we all know, and then Africa. But anyway, in the more recent, in the last 100 years, it'd been mostly until the 80s, people from Latin America. Now the most common are from Asia and Africa. And the woman that I heard talking about it said that that India is one of the biggest countries feeding into us. So I don't know how that relates to California, but...
You know, one thing I'd like to say, if I may, in terms of the heritage that we have as a nation of immigrants, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is our main agency in the federal agency, we had the mission statement of that agency has been the United States Citizen and Immigration Services secures America's promise as a nation of immigrants by providing accurate and useful information to our customers, granting immigration and citizenship benefits, promoting an awareness and understanding of citizenship, and ensuring the integrity of our immigration system. Now, that has been the mission statement for some time, but it has just been changed. And this is important, I think, for us to understand that there's been a major shift in who we are, how we see ourselves as a nation. They eliminated the phrase, a nation of immigrants, but more than that, the mission statement has a totally different feel. It now reads, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services administers the nation's lawful immigration system, safeguarding its integrity and promise by efficiently and fairly adjudicating requests for immigration benefits while protecting Americans, securing the homeland, and honoring our values. It's a very different statement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I noticed I had heard a piece about it on NPR when I was traveling, and then I looked up the interview. I have it. It was really kind of eye-opening that change is happening. It seems to be that there is a shift.
And the law enforcement branch of USCIS used to be called INS, Immigration and Naturalization Services, but it's now called ICE. And there's quite a difference in the tone of that acronym.
Yes. And so people have been working for a long time together with the immigrants who have been trying to sort out their own situation. And I know that here in Shasta County, ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, which you're a member of, Anne, has been doing some things in regards to immigration. Could you talk with us a little bit about that?
Yes. more than a year ago, the ACLU created a grassroots, an invitation for grassroots work called People Power. And you can go online and Google People Power and get right into it. One of the things that they invited local people to do in their everywhere was to visit with the law enforcement agencies in their communities, the city agencies, the county agencies, the sheriffs, the marshals, and ask them, using 9 points of just preferred policy. And basically, each of those points just asked, in the intersection between what an ICE agent is asking you to do and what your agency sees as its mission and tasks in terms of securing safety for your community, when those intersections don't match, what do you do? How do you choose whether you will uphold the integrity of your task of giving security to your community, or whether you will give that aside in order to do something, a particular thing that an ICE agent has asked you to do. And so we formed a committee, a People Power committee, and they've visited many of the agencies around Shasta County and Tama County, the sheriffs, the Basenko and the police
Roger chiefs. Moore.
Roger
Chief Moore.
Moore. Well, it was actually before Moore was here, because we did this more than a year ago. The police chiefs of Redding, of Shasta Lake, well, Shasta Lake City is actually under the sheriff of Anderson, and asked each of those people these questions. Questions that were really almost, it was before the time of the California Sanctuary Bill, but the same kinds of questions. And without exception, every one of them said, you know, our job is to secure the safety and of our communities, and that is what we will do. Obviously, if we're working with a criminal, and that criminal is someone that we're going to hold. And they were also sure that there would not be a time when they would do something for ICE that would either take away from their care of their community or, the bigger thing, take away from the trust that their community had in them. So that was every single law enforcement agency that we visited had that same message back, which was very positive.
And the leaders of the law enforcement agencies should know that the immigrant community is not the major contributor to crime. And the immigrant community also has every interest of getting the criminals out of their community. They give them a bad name. The criminals prey on those populations. And so the law enforcement agencies, or RPD, I know certainly cultivates those good relations with the minority community or the immigrant communities, so they get support. I think I read statistically across the United States that many of the domestic terrorists that we've caught have been as a result of information supplied by those immigrant communities, the Muslim community, for example.
Yeah, which is how this to break the trust is to hurt the communities, because people who might know things are afraid. They become afraid of
certainly.
The legal of the police
law
force.
Enforcement. Yeah, if they don't trust them. Yes, I want to take just a minute to remind listeners that you're listening to listener supported KKRN Community Radio. The show is Community Works Radio. I'm the host, Ellen Sugg, and I'm speaking today with Trent Copeland and Ann Muir, members of our community who deal with issues of immigration in various ways, and that's our topic. So, how about either of you, have you had any experience with ICE? And
well, yeah, I have just recently. I'm aware that they opened up an office about approximately a year ago in Redding. I've heard five agents that cover the whole north end of the state, you know, from just above, starting above Sacramento, our first 1 million people, all the way to the Oregon border. So the five agents to cover everywhere. And they have an office in the federal courthouse there at the corner of Bocelli and Hartnell. About 3 weeks ago, I received a message from a former student of mine, and he was asking for a letter of support. He got himself into some trouble. And I was more than happy. He was a good student, very likable, came from a good family, and I was very happy to write the letter for him. And he was arrested and put in jail and then bailed out. And 3 days after being bailed out, he was picked up by ICE agents and sent to the prison, a detention facility, a federal detention facility in out of Sacramento, Consumnes River Detention Facility. And I was shocked because he was facing the charges. He had no trial, didn't go to trial. It was just charges alone, guilt or innocence. And he's had the right to due process. He was DACA accepted. He'd started in 2012. Those programs are good for 2 years. He had re-upped three times, current DACA. And they set a trap for him. They arrested him 1, 2, 3 days before his trial. And so here he has been. He's still in this detention facility since end of November, first of December. without a trial, and he's being held there. And not only did they arrest him, but they arrested his father, and they released his father. His father had a good, clean record, but I was talking to the father, and the father said, I have to report to the ICE office in headquarters in Sacramento in a couple of weeks. And I said, what's going to happen there? And he was terrified. He said he didn't know. He has many of the illegal immigrants here. They're mixed citizenship families, so they have one or two children that were born in this case Mexico, and they have one or two children that were born here in the United States. And so the father's deathly afraid he's going to go. He has to report down there. He signed a paper and said he will. He's a very strict law abiding man, and I said, but if you drive your car down there and they arrest and they lock you up, the car's going to be impounded. And I said, I'll drive you down. So I drove him down to Sacramento, the ICE office.
Yeah. So what is the deal? I mean, a lot of people, I think, don't realize that immigrants, you know, do have
due process laws,
civil rights, have rights.
Certain.
And that the Constitution says persons, not citizens, in the amendments, the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. And so it is really a lot shocking and alarming, and that's part of the move that's being made by the current administration, is to be a lot less respectful of the rights. Now, I hear an awful lot of people saying things like, well, they're illegal, they came here, they've already are criminals just for being here. But in fact, people, they do have rights as immigrants, whether they're documented or not. They have rights to not be treated that way. He should have been able to go to trial and so on. Do you know anything more about?
Yes. To me, anyone in this country, anywhere in the world, you should have the right to due process, whether it's a laws, written laws or not. You have the right to defend yourself and present evidence and face your accuser, and the right to not be jailed without a reason. This young man has been jailed on charges alone, no trial. He hasn't had his day in court, and I believe he's entitled to that. I'm backing him for the due process part of it. I wasn't there at the time the crimes were committed. Allegedly committed. So I'll let the courts work that, the investigators and the lawyers work that out.
Well, does it look like he will get a trial?
That's a very questionable. Our local law enforcement agencies work together with the immigrant communities. ICE does not want to be known. They're not a visible force in the community. They don't. Maybe they live here temporarily, but I don't know who they are. I know who the Reading Police Department officers are. I know who the sheriff's deputies are, many of them. I know the sheriff. I know where their offices are. I didn't know there was an ICE office in town. They have four or five holding cells in this courthouse. The good news for the father was I drove him down. We were met by an activist down there for that in the Sacramento area, a very wonderful person, told him this is what could happen. You know, here's your options. And he, poor man, was, he cried on the way down. His children cried at home. And everything went well. We were treated respectfully. It went quickly. He reported in. They signed him in and signed us out. We were entering a federal courtroom, so of course we had to take our belts and keys, anything metal, and they were friendly. Chris, thank you. And then he has to report back again in six more weeks. He was unbelievably relieved when it got done. And then driving him home to his home, the family, of course, all but the one son who's in prison, three children come out
and
hug him.
Yeah, yeah.
In detention, correct. And the wife was so relieved. And there, the family is struggling terribly with this. They've had to post bail for they posted bail for their son to get out so he could work with the public defender. And he was arrested 3 days later.
That is quite a sad story.
The bail, $15,000 bail and $5,000 a day. And then it was forfeited because he didn't meet the trial date.
Because he got detained by ICE?
Because he's in the detention center.
Sounds
by
like
ICE.
It's stacked against them for sure. I think I'm going to take a musical break here and to play a beautiful song for you by John Frommer. And I think if you listen to it, you'll understand why I chose it. And we'll get back to more stories about immigrants when we're done listening to it. This is KKRN Community Radio. And here's a musical break.
Come on into my land, it's your land too now. Wanna shake your hand, wanna know your story, the journey you've been on. Wanna hear your language, wanna learn your song. The earth knows no borders, just one sky above, and friendship has no fences, no walls can stop the love. Welcome, make my home yours. These arms are open, and so are the doors. Faces of the world are all around us today. Many voices make for harmony. Let the music play. My life is richer for your presence today. Let's break bread together while our children play. I hope you like it here. I hope that you are safe and your children without fear. But if they come to take you in the dead of the night, I'll be there beside you to stand up for your rights. I will harbor you, I'll fight for you as you say welcome, you are welcome.
Thank you, John Frommer. That was called Welcome, and I think if you were listening, you understand why I picked it for this show on immigration. This is Ellen Sugg. I'm with Ann Muir and Trent Copeland, and we are on KKRN Community Radio in Shasta County. And this show that we're doing today is called Community Works Radio, and the topic that we're talking about is immigration. And these two people that are in the studio with me today have been doing things with immigrants locally, and so that's why it's such a big issue now in the country and something that seems to be dividing us. And it just seems like talking and trying to understand more about these things is nothing but good, because it's heartbreaking what's happening to some of the people and families that are being divided and so on. And I think we can talk a little bit about that. But one question that comes to my mind that I'm interested in you two answering is, what do you think it is that motivates immigrants to come to this country?
Well, of course, a big motivation is economic well-being, and the reality of the way that the major corporations based in and out of the United States have undermined just the basic ability for people, poor people, people living on the land in Central and South America, has often left them unable to just have basic needs met, even food, growing food, you know. And so that's one thing, the economic realities. And of course, another thing that's not only in the Latin American countries, but many others, is the threat of life that people find themselves against, over and against. Sometimes it's governmental threats against them. Sometimes it's
criminal
and gang threats. A lot of drug related gang threats, and people find themselves caught in. If they stay where they are going to lose their lives. It's just a basic reality for many people.
Right.
I know that I started working for the Shasta Union High School District at NOVA, and the Southeast Asians were moving into the west coast of the United States largely. And they came to Redding, a couple hundred families came from the highlands of Laos. And this has interested me. Redding is pretty much an all-white city. And here you've got 1,200 Southeast Asia Highlanders, Hmong and Mien and some Cambodians and Lao and Vietnamese. So I took an interest in them, and I knew I'd had some experience teaching English. And so they're coming; they're escaping the persecution from the being on the our allies. We lost that conflict over there. And so I'm proud of the United States Orderly Departure Program that said – Who knew we would have lost? But the best we can do is say you invite you here. So they came as I-94 political refugees.
Yes, and in certain countries in Latin America, where the U.S. backed terrible dictators, where they were killing people that didn't agree with them, they were killing people for quite a lot of reasons: being gay, being. I don't know what else, not believing in what they're doing. And so they were escaping for your lives, like for their life, like you say. And again, of course, the refugee situation, which was what we're talking about.
Yes.
They're not just choosing to leave. They're refugees. They need to get away. And of course, we see the wars that are going on in Africa and, the Middle East, Syria. You see those pictures and you wonder, no wonder people are leaving, and they want to be in a place that's safe. And we do tend to have a certain amount of safety here.
And the families, the Southeast Asian families that came here from the highlands, there was quite a contrast between American culture and their culture. They stood out. They looked different. I don't think it's not so much racism that describes a large, a good portion of the population. It's a bigotry, perhaps, or the fear of something different. And, who are these people and what are they doing here? And a lot of myths come out and how they're getting their money and what they're getting from taxpayers, largely myths. And my goal was, if I wanted them to learn English, I made them comfortable. If they're fearful, they're not learning, they're not adapting. Think of how much easier the transition into our culture would be if the neighbors asked them, is everything all right? Can I help you do something? The transition would have been so much easier, so less costly, so less divisive if you'd treat people the way you'd like to be treated. And I know when I grew up in Redding, and every people always asking me, checking on me, making sure things were okay. I felt safe in the community, and that's what I tried to do with the Southeast Asians and the Hispanic community. And that's what the local law enforcement tried to do as well. Jim Pope with the Sheriff's Department and Bob Blankenship started it all with the Redding Police Department, and they had community meetings where they would reach out to these folks.
Yes, and to me, in a sense, when we're talking about these people that are coming for saving their lives or as political refugees or as refugees from war, that's where the idea of sanctuary places come in. A sanctuary, church, county, city, state. Originally, from my understanding, this is sanctuary dates back thousands of years, and originally it was in the churches. It says, rooted in faith communities, sanctuary dates to the ancient Hebrew people who allowed temples and even whole cities to declare themselves places of refuge for persons wrongly accused so that they might negotiate for a just outcome. And so you gather around and protect people that are not being given the things that they need for a just outcome and or for life. And that's a humane thing. That's a humanitarian thing. That's people being good to one another and looking out for one another. And that's where I find it hard to understand why people are so anti-immigrant, when it's like these people have a need to be here, just as our ancestors, you know, if you're not Native American, you are from an immigrant family, and at some point down the line, and we all came here, and that's
yeah, and indeed, the you know, the initial mission statement of the agency, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service, the initial mission statement was just that, that we would give people the ability to work with integrity towards towards in the immigration system. And indeed, our immigration system has integrity to it. And when people have come, it's become more and more difficult to navigate it. And if you're an asylum seeker, you're the difficulty of navigating the system is even more complicated, having to prove that you are, in fact, endangered at home, and the way that that can be played with. And it used to be that as an asylum seeker was not sent back without clarity that they, in fact, were not
assurance that they were safe.
And the person themselves knows whether they're safe or not. And that, and the undue task of getting through the system, the number of years that a person will spend going to different meetings and different appointments and paying $1,000 for this, $2,000 for this, is just, it's arduous. The system itself is arduous. And people have been working in that, and then they might have been spending the last two or three decades and have given thousands of dollars into it, and now something happens and they're whisked away and called illegal. That's happening.
And yeah, and I think that's part of the plan. The United States is a very difficult country to get in legally, and I think that's part of the process. It's, they're understaffed often. It takes a long, long time, and you have to follow certain steps and procedures along the way. And if you miss any of those steps, you sometimes go back to the back of the line, or you don't get back in. And the ones that come here illegally, they could not get in. Just being a poor farmer and you want a better life for your children, it's not going to happen. People say, well, they need to come through the same process that my ancestors came through. No, they can't get in that way. There's just absolutely the door.
How many of us, probably maybe not those in this room or many listening, but there are people who feel somehow more secure if they have the sense that there's these federal policing agents who can go and rescue us from these terrible, bad people. And when we hear illegal, they're bad people, get them out of here, then we blind our eyes to what's happening, and they're gone. And to have a large federal police force that can be inside of our local police force agencies and can remove people at will without due process, that we are willing and able to somehow normalize that in our idea of how our United States of America works, that, you know, that's what's different. I just want to put that out, friends, because that's what is different. So I don't want us to get blindsided by the terribleness of what's happening to think that that's what we need to be talking about. Not that we need to be talking about those particular lives that are being totally torn apart, but we need to not let that distract us from the idea that we have now become normalized to a federal police force coming in our local areas and removing people from their homes, from their jobs, from school, from, you know,
helpless people.
Buses, people who have no, they have no due process given to them. They're the weak, and you know, we are, this is very big. And I'd like to see our immigration conversations turn on that point too.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take a minute to remind listeners that this is KKRN, community radio, listener-supported in Shasta County, and that today this you're listening to Community Works Radio. My guests are Trent Copeland and Ann Muir, who are people from our community that do work and are familiar with immigrants and actions that are being taken on behalf of immigrants. And so that's why we're talking about this with them today. And so I'm glad to have you both, and we are down to our last 15 minutes.
I think what Ann brought up is they're trying to normalize this idea of having these federal officers here that don't want to be known. There's no big signs advertising. I told everyone where they're located, and I don't think many people know of this. And they're going after the disenfranchised, and this is the roots of fascism. This is exactly who they single a group out, a defenseless group. They isolate them. They convince the rest of the population that they're bad and it's their source of all our problems. And, you know, if we removed all the illegals from this country, then who would we blame our problems on?
Right.
It's not the illegals.
We've got some other ones to blame it on.
Yes. And I think some of the homeless is getting marginalized as well and having due process denied, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, the judges, I mean, and the judiciary, which does play a role in our country, mm-hmm. an important one, tends to be so far, protecting the laws that are in place under the attack of the Trump administration. And I don't know if our listeners were aware that on Monday, the Supreme Court rejected mm-hmm. the administration's request to speed up the legal fight over protections for undocumented immigrants mm-hmm. who came to the United States as children, the DACA that we were talking about earlier. So this is a big one. And the Supreme Court unanimously made this decision that mm-hmm. they would not fast track this. So that gives the dreamers, the people who were fearing that as their day came, the ICE would be knocking on their door to deport them, mm-hmm. breaking up families, and just causing terrible things in these people's lives. At least for right now, the Supreme Court would not even have a chance to look at this, because we assume that the current administration is going to keep appealing the lower courts. But I do think that an awful lot of the judges totally are supportive of the rights, of the due process rights of the immigrants, and recognize that it's just not possible to, well, like exactly what you said, I heard a judge saying, you just can't go down and pick up a person and say you've got to leave.
But they can't. But they're doing it.
But it's not legal. That's where
you get them on a bus or a plane and send them to the other country before they've had a trial, before they've had a chance to present their case. And very often these arrests are of questionable legality, the process that these ICE agents are going through. They don't want people to know about their processes. They're setting traps, and it's incredible. I know one example of a young man who committed a fairly serious crime, and he spent a number of years. He served his sentence. I'm a firm believer that you commit the crime, you do the time, and then you come back and are given a chance to blend back to prove yourself good. He served his several years, his sentence, and ICE was waiting for him at the penitentiary. And then he spent 3 more years in a federal detention center. 3 years without charges, without a trial, with an indefinite time. When do I get out? But they're not going to tell him. It finally, through some protest by his family, they finally got a judge to hear the case. 3 years in a federal detention facility, and the judge says, "Okay, you served your time. Go back home." Yeah. To Reading. Come back home to Reading, and he's here now.
I think it's getting pretty close to the end, and I do want to, you know, one of the things that I am always interested in talking about is what people can do here in Shasta County. If you're listening, or if you're, or elsewhere, if you're listening from elsewhere in their own communities, but in particular right here in Redding, if somebody is listening to this and says, oh, I want to help these, I want to stand with the immigrants, where can they go? What can they do? What kind of work is being done here? And are there some contacts we can give them? I think you said People Power at ACLU.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. The ACLU People Power is one place that people can go and connect with others or even work on themselves on a task that's set out there. You can go into the website. And whether you're working to help the local law agencies follow their laws. That's one thing. We all believe in the laws, right? Mm-hmm. The laws are going to save us. And that's what the ACLU does. Or whether you're working to understand how the district attorney and his or her interaction with the legal system can aid or thwart the good efforts. So you can get involved through the ACLU People Power. You can learn how to make yourself a well-informed and powerful activist in the legal system in your own town.
I'm a board member of SCAR, Shasta County Citizens Advocating Respect. It was founded 25 years ago by Mrs. Isaac Lowe, a civil rights activist. And our goal is to see that social justice is a reality. You can join SCAR. You can come to our meet. We meet the first Monday of every month. Type in SCAR and you could get that information.
And is that SCCAR,
correct?
Not just one C.
SECAM is the Southeast Asian Christian Ministry that opened up when the Southeast Asians were coming into Redding in the mid-1980s. You don't have to be Christian. It's Southeast Asian Christian Ministry, but they minister to any immigrants that come here. And you don't have to be Southeast Asian, and you don't have to be Christian. They don't proselytize, but their board is made up of 7 or 8 members from various churches in the community, and they help do paperwork, DACA paperwork, certainly, and other immigration. Alice McFadden is the wonderful director, and she'll help you through the process. So you can ask neighbors that you think might be immigrants and take them to Alice and introduce them, and she'll do the paperwork free of charge. She's certified by the USCIS to do so.
So you can go to People Power, you can go to SCAR, SCCAR, and you go to SECAM?
SECAM, certainly.
And how do you find that again?
That's in the phone book under Southeast Asian Christian Ministry.
Okay.
Alice is the director.
Or Google SEACM.
Certainly.
Okay. Okay, great.
I think just familiarize yourself with the Constitution, what the laws are, and don't give in to these quick myths that are being thrown out there. Give it some real thought and correct those when they're wrong would help.
Yes. Yeah, speak to your friends and neighbors. You know, when you're around the dinner table and someone is saying things that are simply not true, you know, be brave enough to say, well, that's not my understanding.
Right. And I think there are plenty of people in Shasta County that do get it and do know that it's an act of humanity and of humaneness to treat others. They're our neighbors. They're fellow human beings. And that's what we need to remember when we can't dehumanize these people.
And they're important economic contributors to our society. That's
exactly
one thing we cannot forget.
They're good, solid families. Traditional family values. These are not wild-eyed, bomb-throwing anarchists.
Right.
These are good.
And I've seen people stepping up in the paper writing letters to the editor and opinion pieces in favor of Shasta County people being friendly and kind and being willing to be a sanctuary county,
DACA
unfortunately our Board of Supervisors did not decide to do.
DACA has built in clauses that serious criminals are not allowed in DACA, and serious criminals are not allowed in the sanctuary status either. These are built-in safeguards.
Very good. Well, I want to thank both of you very much, Trent and Ann, for being here today. And I appreciate your thoughts and sharing your experiences on this very important topic. Any last words before I, from Ann, anything else you'd like to say?
Thank you for having us. And what I say to others, or if I hear incorrect information tossed out there, and if I correct someone in a diplomatic way, that goes for me too. You know, if you've heard something today on this program, and you're certain that I'm wrong or have differing ideas, please come to me. You know, approach me and let's discuss it.
And you can get through to us.
Yeah, and I just like to say, you know, in the at the county supervisors meeting when they were discussing the state sanctuary law, both the sheriff and the county, the DA, both said there's nothing in this sanctuary law that keeps us from doing exactly what we do all the time. So it was, it's political posturing. It's necessary. It builds fear and anger and gives nothing in return.
Okay. Well, thank you. Good parting comments. You have been tuned into listener-supported KKR Community Radio, Community Works Radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. You can become a listener supporter of KKRN by going to our website, kkrn.org, and clicking on the donate button, or by mailing a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California. You can call 337-1101 to learn how to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio. And remember that KKRN programming streams live on our website and on the KKRN mobile phone app. We also have a Facebook at KKRN 88.5 where you can like us and get news about your community radio. Thank you for listening to Community Works Radio on KKRN. If you would like to talk about your community organization and work, please call me at our business line, 337-1101. I hope you'll tune in the last Tuesday of each month to hear your neighbors tell us about the good work they are doing for the benefit of our community. Coming up next on KKRN is the Tom Hartman program until 6, and then broadcast from 6 to 7, our newest daily talk show on KKRN. Until my next show, you can tune in at 4 p.m. to hear With Good Reason from Pacifica Radio at this time slot. So, and looking forward to talking with you again in a month. And in the meantime, remember, it's going to take us all.
We need the Buddhists and the Baptists, Quakers and Catholics too, the atheists and agnostics, Muslims and Jews. We need people of all nations, all colors and all creeds, to put an end to war now, put an end to greed. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all. It's gonna take us all. We need the immigrants and the unions, the greens and the gays, hip-hoppers and the bebopers and women for equal pay. Farm workers out in the sun, homeless out in the rain, seniors and soccer moms, a world that is humane. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all. It's gonna take us all.
come check us out at 88.5.
Hey, this is Kimbo at KKR in Bella Vista.
And this is Summertime in Round Mountain. Come check us out at 88.5.
This program is made possible in part by listeners like you and David Toivainen, physical therapist. David teaches motivated patients how to eliminate or minimize recurrent or variable low back pain. David Toivainen, physical therapist, can be reached at 530-223-6288 or on the web at lowbackpainphysicaltherapy.com. KKRN thanks David Toivainen for supporting community radio.
Programming on KKRN Community Radio is supported by listeners like you and the Shasta Piping Society. The Shasta Piping Society is a charitable organization dedicated to the encouragement of musicians and listeners of the Scottish Highland Bagpipe. The Society grants refurbished instruments to...